This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares one of the segments from the Franklin, Mass. Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. The meeting was conducted in hybrid format. Members of the Town Council, selected guests, and town administration personnel were in the council chambers. The public was remote via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I split the full four-hour-plus meeting into three logical segments. The first segment covers the opening through the first public hearing on the tax rate and subsequent votes to approve 14.65 cents as the rate for the FY 2021 year. That segment runs an hour and 5 minutes. The second segment covers the other two public hearings, the Comcast contract renewal for 10 years, and the bylaw fee adjustment to reduce the fees for next year only to help alleviate some of the impact to the local restaurants during this COVID-19 pandemic period. This segment's the shortest one in about 36 minutes. The third segment covers the presentation and discussion on the spearfishing incident through to the end of the meeting. There was a four-minute recess during this segment. I did remove most of the silence to reduce the time for the segment where I could. It still runs 2 hours and 17 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda, including the documents released for this agenda, as well as the presentation that was released after the meeting. So let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of December 2nd, 2020.
Good evening. Time being 7 o'clock, I call the December 2nd, 2020 meeting of the Franklin Town Council to order. Please pause for a moment of silence. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Due to the continued concerns regarding the COVID-19 virus and Governor Baker's declared state of emergency, we will be conducting a remote virtual town council meeting for all public access and participation. The public will not be permitted to enter the building or participate in person. Only pre-approved participants on the meeting agenda will be allowed to enter the building and participate in person. In an effort to ensure citizen engagement and comply with open meeting law regulations, citizens will be able to dial into the meeting using the provided phone number or log in by using the Zoom link, both of which are printed on tonight's agenda, which can be found on the town's website at www.franklinma.gov. For those of you who don't have access to a computer, the call-in number is 1-929-205-6099 and enter the meeting ID number, which is 859-9274-9120#. Once again, the dial-in number 929-205-6099, and the meeting ID is 859-9274-9120#. The link and phone number will be active for the duration of the meeting for citizens to ask questions or voice concerns. And I can see that we've added the phone number and the Zoom ID to the television screens so that everybody can see them. Thank you, Mr. Ciccone, for that suggestion. Announcements from the chair. This meeting is being recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. This meeting may be recorded by others. Second announcement from the chair, a temporary town clerk would like to speak. Please come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. I have a few things tonight, but first I wish to extend my deepest condolences to the family of Charlie Repetto. Charlie passed away last week at the age of 82. He was an election worker for the town for many years. Great guy, and he will be missed. Rest in peace, Charlie. Secondly, I want to remind everybody this Saturday, it's election day. We'll be at the high school from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Please don't forget to come down and vote. And like the state election, there'll be parking for seniors and handicapped residents directly in front of the gym. I'm sorry, I have to take this off. They'll be parking directly in front of the gym. And in the main entrance of to the gym is where everybody's going to enter. So I'm not going to make you walk down that long hallway, but unfortunately, you will have to walk through the gym. There'll be an election worker at the door to guide you if you're unaware of what precinct you're in. So I understand that if you're in precinct 6, 7, and 8, still a long walk through the gym. So what I did is I called Erin, the senior center, and I got a wheelchair. So if you want help getting into the gym, call me, 508-520-4900. I'll give you my cell phone number at the time of arrival. Give me a call and we'll gladly go out and help you into the gym. That's all I have. I just want to wish everybody a happy holiday season, and I hope to see everybody on Saturday. That was quick tonight, huh?
Very good.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. Great job. Thanks.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead, Deb.
Nancy?
Yes.
A question.
I'm sorry.
I just want you to know that the school department has wheelchairs. The nursing station, because we used to always have them up there for anybody that needed them.
Good to know.
Okay.
Now I'll have two.
Now you'll have a seat. See that? And secondly, they tell me I have to use this. Okay. Next is, I've had concerns myself, and other people have asked me too, how this election day got changed to a Saturday and how we changed the time. Those are two things that can only be done by the council, and we had nothing to do with it.
So unfortunately,
probably before your time.
Yeah, because it was before my time.
Yeah.
The date was changed to a Saturday because it is a special election, and the time was actually changed for the state election as well. So I can't answer that. I don't know, Debbie. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, honey. Maybe through the chair.
Sure.
Mark, maybe you can. Is he here?
Mm-hmm. Attorney Sorrell? There he is.
Hello.
Now we have you, Mark.
Yeah, I think I was unmuted and muted myself. At any rate, I wasn't in the loop when those decisions were made, so perfectly honestly, I can't give you an answer off the top of my head.
But you are in agreement that it's the council that would make those decisions.
I don't have an opinion on it at the moment.
I don't believe it. Only for 30-some-odd years, I always came to the council, and the council were the ones that decided. And it's under the Mass General Law, Chapter Election Laws. I don't know the number right now, but we'll look into it, okay? And I'll have it for you. Thank you very much, Nancy. Thank you.
I am an early riser, so we'll go back to it. 6 a.m.
Well, the reason that we had it 6 o'clock was way back when we had the farmers, and they would get up in the morning and go and vote first thing and then come back again. And a couple of times, well, clerk, someone had asked me, why are you still opening at 6? And I said, because I'm not bringing this to the council to change it. I know at 6 o'clock we've had 100 people plus, and I can almost name them, that would come in right for the 6 o'clock because they would catch the train now.
Well, maybe it was because of COVID and no one's riding the train. Everyone's working from home.
Well, regardless of the reasoning, it can't be done the way that it was. It has to come before us. So that's something I'm going
to
ask for an agenda item tonight, okay? Thanks,
we'll
Nancy. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank
okay,
you.
Honey.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on. Citizens' comments. Citizens are welcome to express their views for up to 5 minutes on a matter that is not on the agenda. The council will not engage in a dialogue or comment on a matter raised during citizens' comments. The town council will give remarks appropriate consideration and may ask the town administrator to review the matter. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? So if you
this is Alan Earls, I'd love to talk. I can't raise my hand because for some reason Zoom is not working.
Okay. Just identify yourself and address, please.
Sure. Alan Earls. I'm at 23 Marvin Avenue. And I just need to mute my computer audio if I can do that because I'm getting an echo. I'll just try to deal with it. Okay. I'd like to, since we were just talking about elections, I'd like to mention my experiences at Franklin High School during the last election cycle on November 3rd. I was there campaigning for the upcoming town council election, taking advantage of the presence of so many motivated voters. And with my silly little hat on, I went out in the parking lot and talked to voters, mentioned, I think humorously, don't vote for me, but come back in December and vote for me. And a lot of people laughed, and I gave them my card, and we moved on. During that process, I was approached by someone from the town clerk's office who told me I was bothering people and I had to stop doing it. I was kind of surprised because everyone had seemed friendly, but I said, well, okay. Anyway, I went home and I decided to look up the law, which I think is Chapter 65, and it says that you can do pretty much anything as long as you're outside of the 150-foot exclusion zone. So I went back, talked to the same individual, explained that as far as I could see, there was nothing illegal that I was doing. And I was told there wasn't, but people were complaining. So I said, well, okay, yeah, if I'm not doing anything illegal, I'm going to go back out, but let me know if there's a problem. And I continued to talk to folks. A few days later, I was invited to be on the Democrat Town Committee candidate night Zoom call. And at that point, an individual from the committee sort of ambushed me and said, well, you know, you were repeatedly violating campaign laws and regulations that we'd agreed on with the town, and therefore, what makes you fit to serve in public office if you're so cavalier about the law? And I explained what I'd done, and then, you know, she, I believe, mentioned that there are something like 20 or 30 rules that have been agreed to by the town. So, I went home, I ended up talking to other people and found out I wasn't the only person that had been told to stop, and some people were even yelled at. So I looked at the law, contacted the Department of Elections, and they said there's nothing wrong with it. I talked to our deputy chief of police because the chief himself was out of town, James Mill, and he agreed that the only regulation that applies is Chapter 65. And said I was just exercising my normal rights as a citizen. And likewise, I spoke again to our acting town clerk, and she reiterated that there was nothing I was doing that was illegal. So given that there's apparently this rumored set of rules around that nobody seems to know about but a few, I think it would be very helpful if the town council took steps to ensure that citizens know that there's only one law, the state's law, unless there's been some other law that we don't know about, and that anybody that operates within those laws is doing so legally and should not be harassed. You know, we've already kind of gone down the road of deteriorating free speech in this town recently, and I think this is one more sad step. We haven't had this much impingement on free speech since Reverend Emmons still walked the earth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Earls. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on an item not on tonight's agenda? I'm not seeing anything. Chrissy, are you seeing anything?
No.
Okay, moving on. We do not have any minutes to approve. We don't have any proclamations or recognitions. nor do we have any appointments, so we'll move right to hearings. And our first hearing of the evening is Franklin Tax Classification Hearing, and I would declare that meeting open. Jamie, would you like to do the lead-in?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as folks on the council know, and for all the viewers at home, this is the annual tax rate setting hearing. This is done traditionally at the first meeting in December every year. And I'm going to pass the baton over to the Board of Assessors in a moment, as well as our Principal Assessor, Kevin Doyle, for a short presentation. But for the folks listening at home, I just want to add a couple statistics. That the median household value increased this year by 2.8%. And the tax rate is being proposed at an increase of only 14 cents after I believe it was last year where it went up one penny. I think one thing I want to mention is how great of a job all of our staff and our assessors and appraisers do. I do want to note quickly that this is a year, obviously, like no other. I want to remind people that Kevin and his staff do inspections and assessments and appraisals at those properties. It's easy for us to all take for granted that this was a COVID year. And it was a very challenging one at the beginning to figure out what we were supposed to do, how we were supposed to do this. And I just I can't say enough about Kevin and his staff and truly their bravery for going out to people's homes and properties in the middle of this pandemic. As all of you know, Kevin and the assessors are essentially the gas in the tank that runs the car. If you don't have them, we don't have a team. We don't have staff. We don't have programs. We don't have revenue. And so what the Board of Assessors and Kevin does is a critical, critical feature to our organization. And I can't thank them enough for their hard work this year and being in their dedication to their jobs to be able to go out in a very nerve-wracking environment where some residents don't want people in their house, some people have, you know, and all the other dynamics we've heard of. So, and the last thing I would mention is I have gotten some phone calls about this. This is not an override vote. For those of you that are joining us for the first time, this has nothing to do with the override word. This is an annual tax rate hearing that is required by law. This essentially closes out the fiscal year 21 for what we are currently in. So I just now want to pass it over to, I want to acknowledge really quickly Ken Norman, as well as Dan Ballister and Chris Feely we have behind us, are the three members of your elected Board of Assessors. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to Kevin and Chris to engage in the presentation.
Thank you very much. Very briefly, but by no means trying to minimize it, we very much appreciate the support of the town administrator, his office, and all of the town departments. Particularly, I'd like to mention technology that was a great deal of help figuring out how we were going to do a lot of our work remotely and successfully. I also would like to especially show my appreciation for the finance department as a whole, and in particular the treasurer collector's office in conjunction with ours, the use of the portal, that is the drive up window, and phone calls that they were receiving that they were handling very well on our behalf initially at times until we had an opportunity to return a call and assist the citizens' needs. That all being said, let's move on to some of the things that were primary concern tonight. The primary purpose of the meeting really is to establish the relationship of the tax rates, whether or not the town would continue with a single tax rate or, you know, certainly look at the option of what a dual tax rate would mean. Historically, the town has always had a single tax rate. We have an approximate now our percentage mix of residential versus commercial, industrial, and personal business, personal property assets is about 79%, closer to 79% residential and 81% residential and 19%. We've been running about 80-20, but it's starting to show a little bit because of the rapid appreciation that we've seen in the last couple of years in the residential sector and not quite as much commercial industrial appreciation, although we've had some pretty good development coming forward. There's four in the vote. Your votes will involve four resolutions. The first one is relative to the tax rate. A factor of one means a single tax rate. In the other resolutions are actually not applicable at this time. The second one is relative to what's called open space. It's a particular term that's used in many places in the general law, but in this case, it has to do with a specific classification of property that has not been elected by the Board of Assessors. The third area is in what's known as the residential exemption. And that is mostly involving communities, excuse me, that have a large non-resident ownership of residentially classed property. For example, primary residents in many Cape Cod communities, in some cases, it's a secondary residence and not the primary. It's not owner considered owner occupied rental, mostly rental properties. Cities with large apartment complexes, and of course we have many of those starting to come in as well, but they when they're Cambridge or Boston, where they have so many non-owner occupied apartments, those types of communities start looking at, can we accept so much off the owner-occupied single, two, and three-family homes, and shift some of that burden onto the non-owner-occupied apartment complexes. So that's not, and those are not applicable options. And as neither is the what's called the small commercial exemption. There's nothing that we found that fits into that particular category. In either the residential exemption or the small commercial exemption, that class of property still has to raise the same amount of revenue as in the single single tax rate scenario. So therefore, if you had an option to do something like that, you would actually end up with a higher rate in those areas to make up the difference for those that are getting relief. I'd like to move on to six particular areas, six slides that illustrate. First one would be great. This one is new growth, and it will show you revenue this year. Firstly, the amount of value. The amount of revenue. In each of the major classes of property. So on the left, new growth valuation, 12.9 in single family home, improvements and new buildings and completions of previously started single homes. $22.5 million in condominiums, residential condominiums. And then a little bit in multifamily, $20 million in the larger multifamily group, and that really is primarily attributed to, in this case, the property complex at Dean Avenue. Not too many lot divisions, so the land growth is relatively small. Moving down, commercial, that's represented primarily, that represents a couple of projects on Union Street. One is the renovation of the old Boston Sports Club, the Milford Eye, Milford Franklin Eye Center. And the other is the startup of the hotel, the new hotel on that way. And moving into industrial, and about two-thirds of that, or no, probably three-quarters of that, is attributed to the property at 300 Financial Park. Extremely 300,000 square foot industrial building down there on the former Putnam property going back. That will tell you, and there's also new growth as we've had annually discovered and identified and calculated for personal, for business personal property, which also includes utilities. And that is something that is present and occurring annually. This next page gives you the buildup of the levy limit. And the question came up about, oh, the tax rate, how come it went up, you know? Well, it didn't go up very much. And actually, if all things remained equal in terms of the values, if they were stayed the same, and we only added to 2.5% to our, which is our normal allowance for growth, budget growth, the rate would have been 14.86, you know, in that scenario. But in fact, values have appreciated, so the rate can be a little less, and it's 14.65 is the one that we're looking at as a uniform rate. The next page is calculation over time of the median or the middle single family home. So if you array, if you run a list low to high of all the single family homes in town, and you pick the one in the middle, what's the value of that? It's this 1441. Excuse me, 441,300 is that value. There are as many single family homes below that number as there are above that number. And that just is there to compare with the next page, which is, next screen shows you the average, or what's called the mean. It's the average. So you add up the value of all the single family homes, divide it by the number of them, and you have a result in a higher number of 473,300, which is the one we commonly use and is the one that Jamie referred to earlier. This, of course, is a small illustration of the fact that properties that are being added to the rolls are obviously higher than that average number. They're on the high end from you know, 5, 6, 7, 800 million dollars, you know, in that range. The next page shows you historically all the way back to 1988, what the average single family home value was. The number of single family homes and the tax rate associated in that year, the actual certified tax rate. And the single family home tax bill. And the incremental increase from year to year on the right column, showing you that this year it was approximately $254 based on that average single family home, what it was paying, what the average one was paying last year, and what the new average one is paying this, under this proposed tax rate of $14.65.
Boring.
Last page is the classification options, last screen. One should be there. Is it on there? Is there one more screen?
Yep.
Okay. So this is a summary of options. At the top, it shows you the 81% residential, the value and the percentage, and then commercial, industrial, and personal property, which for us here is business assets. At just under 19%. The bottom of the screen shows you the first line, what a uniform tax rate is at 1465 for all classes. And there's a few examples of increments in between, down to the high, the highest allowable shift, which is 1.5, which would mean that the tax rate for commercial, industrial, and personal would be 1.5 times the what the single tax rate would be, the uniform tax rate would have been. Then that shows you the resulting relief, if you will, on the residential side. If you go about halfway down, we'll actually to 1.3, you'll see a residential rate of $13.63. So that's a $1.02 reduction in the residential rate. And if you go to the right, you'll see $19.04, which is means that it's $4.39, I believe is the number, increase in the commercial rate in order to give just about a dollar's relief on the residential side. It's not a free ride, though, because I would caution you that the any shift onto the commercial is going to be an increase, obviously, in their tax. And commercial property is sensitive to the income stream offset by the expenses. Now the tax, we handle the tax a little different than on the fee side, but the result is the same. The tax in a fee appraisal would be an offset to the gross income, reducing further as it increases the net operating income to the property owner, not the business. But we work that into a slightly different scenario. It's called a tax factor that's added to the capitalization, the investment rate. The higher the tax factor, the lower the value. So there's a sort of a continuous offset that takes place. And some folks in the industry refer to it as the slippery slope, because it seems like sometimes a community will stop moving in towards shifting the tax rate, and then they'll shift a little bit more and a little more. Before you know it, they found that they've created something a little different than they may have anticipated. I guess that's about all I can provide you at this time, except to answer any questions you might have. Chris may be able to provide you answers.
Mr. Feely, would you like to add anything?
I'd like to start with Jamie.
Thank you, Chris. Jamie, anything to add?
I'll say, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll go to the council. Councilor Bisanti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Kevin and perhaps Chris also. I'm just thinking out loud here. When you do the apartments, you do them on the income approach?
Yes.
Okay. And I would have thought that would have given us a bit of a shot in the arm as far as the tax revenue base increase. That doesn't help as far as all the apartments that have been developed recently. Well,
they've been coming online, and as I said, most of that $20 million this year was the changes that took place on Dean Ave from June 30th of 19 to June 30th of 20.
I'm glad you just said that. Maintain the floor, Mr.
Sure, absolutely.
So with that said, and perhaps Councilor Kelly can chime in here too later, but I'm just thinking, what's going on out there in the real estate market now? The market's on fire. The valuations are going up so fast, okay? Or values are going up fast. And prices are going up fast. I would think that would help us a little bit in deferring. I mean, with the real estate valuations increasing so rapidly, does that still impose the need for a tax rate hike? And when do you start enjoying those valuation increases? So if we left everything alone, but just sat back and watched valuations increase in Franklin, okay, would that satisfy our needs, or we still need a tax rate on top of the increasing valuations?
Well,
if I may, if I'm here,
Chris, if you could come,
oh, sorry,
just so that everybody at home can hear.
If I'm hearing your question correct, if the values of the property increase, what does it do to the tax rate?
Correct, because may I respond? So, Chris, what I'm saying is, with valuations going up, mm-hmm. do tax rates have to go up? Don't they feed off one another?
They're diametrically opposed. So, as the values go up, the tax rate would go down.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we had a huge increase in property values, our tax rate would go down.
Does it have to go down?
Yes, it does. Because okay. It's a calculation used to establish the tax levy. So, we take all the property and we have a total value, and we divide that by our tax levy, and mm-hmm. that gives us the tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a calculation that we do, the assessor's department does, and if property values go up, the rate will go down, not necessarily corresponding, but it will go down, taking into account the 2.5%.
You understand why I'm asking that? It almost appears by perception that we're double dipping. We're getting increased valuations and increased taxes. So
the
tax rate.
Right, the tax rate, as you'll see, went up basically
14 cents.
A minuscule amount.
But people are complaining, you can imagine.
Well, yeah. Can't help with that. But we take into account the 2.5%. So if you look at the tax rate, it didn't go up 2.5%.
Right.
So that as the values go up, the rate will go down. It will increase slightly because of the 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
But in your scenario, if there was not the increase in the tax rate, would have gone up to 28 cents or 29 cents. The values went up, which held it down.
So they are tied into one another. There's no
they go
double dip. We're not double dipping. We're not getting it both ways.
No.
We're just okay.
No. And they go in opposite directions. If the values go up, the rate will go down. If the rate goes up, the values.
Well,
go down.
Yeah, like you said, they're diametrically opposed. But I'm just saying that's. I'm glad we're saying this because I think a lot of people out there need to hear it. Thank you.
Okay.
I release the floor, yes.
Thank you, Councilor Bisanti. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle, and I appreciate your elected board, everything they're doing. Thank you. Let me just ask some more layman questions. I know. How many towns, are most towns around us dual tax rate when you talk to your peers?
Not really.
Jamie, you might have a better answer for it.
You're always comparing apples and oranges on this one. Every community makes their own decision based on their own unique characteristics. If you look at communities around our size, you're going to find that some towns do have that split rate, but you're talking about the Needhams, the Lexingtons, I-95 corridor, different communities. So no matter where you want to compare about population, size, budget, you're going to find that the vast majority of communities out this neck of the woods do not have that split rate. They have the single rate. But you get to the Marlboros, you get to different communities, now you're talking that there may be some of those towns do have that nexus. But it's an individual decision based on the community. And, you know, since I've certainly been here, and we can talk about it, there is a cause and effect when you go for that split rate that is in my view, very dangerous. But most of the communities around us do have a single rate.
Okay, just a couple more. Now, the 80-20 split, we've been that way for 20. Has it ever changed?
Been that way for quite some time.
I can never remember it not being 80-20. Okay.
Before that, it was, you know, there was less. I mean, going back probably 20 years now. So you can actually see that, you know, as industry was encouraged in terms of developing the two industrial parks, especially, and the shopping mall, as those things were able to come online, that's when we got into the 80-20 split.
Okay. Actually, this goes into my next question. The vacancy rate, do you know that for the industrial?
Well, we stratify that, a little bit. We temper that for each occupancy a little bit different. I can't really tell you right offhand what we're applying to, say, an industrial at the moment. There's a little bit of an adjustment. The rate we have is for vacancy and collection loss.
Okay.
And I don't have the number in front of me.
Mr. Chairman.
Sure, go ahead, Councilor Chairman.
Just so people at home get a baseline, so the tax rate would be $14.65 on a single. Just say we had a dual tax rate and it was $17.65. Could you calculate what that would save the average homeowner? Or is that too difficult to do right now?
Well,
on the average house, the $400.
If I may.
Please, Mr. Feely.
If you're asking if they changed the residential rate by a dollar.
Yeah, if we had a dual,
a dollar, it would save, give me a second here, somewhere in the range of $425 on the average home.
Okay, so if we did the split, it would save the average house.
Right, it would save the average house about $425 off the top of my head if we reduced the residential rate by a dollar. But in correspondingly, it would raise the average commercial property by the same valued commercial property by $1,700.
Yeah, triple.
Okay.
Triple.
Yeah, no, I'm in favor of the single rate. I just wanted people to know that. I just needed people to understand all the ins and outs of it. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been sitting through a lot of these for quite some time, and I understand quite a bit about what you're talking about. My question is in regards to our current assessed property values. And our number one, I'm assuming, is still Franklin Village Plaza as far as overall assessed value. That Chopin Plaza still ranks up number one as our highest tax value, our highest valuation for the town.
the sum of the shopping center,
yes,
and the office building is about $60 million.
So they've ranked number one in our basically our valuation for the town, correct? Like they have, they've pretty much been the number one highest valued property in the town of Franklin.
Close. If you wanted to add the two EMC properties together,
yes, yeah, because they've always
50 yep. and 55.
So basically, in a nutshell,
they're at about 65 million.
So basically, in a nutshell, our two, one of our largest commercial properties and one of our largest industrial properties is the largest tax contributor to the town of Franklin. Is that a safe assessment to say that? Yes. Okay. So of those major properties that make up the bulk of our 20%, which is the 9% for the industrial and the 6% for the commercial, that 20% basically offsets the largest percentage of our tax assessments. And it actually takes less burden, which in turn puts less burden on the residential. Is that a safe assessment to make as well? Because of the total valuation of industrial commercial properties actually helps offset the valuations of the residentials. Is that a safe assessment?
The tax burden. Certainly. Yeah.
So that's a safe assessment. So basically our industrial commercial properties actually help keep our tax rates for our residential properties relatively low. And in comparison, everyone's equal with the single tax rate.
We have one of the lowest, if not the lowest in the region.
Yes.
And it's a single rate.
And it's comparable. It's been single rate for as long as you can remember and as long as I can remember.
Right.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions, because I get asked quite a bit from people saying, well, why don't we go to a split tax rate? And I think Chris, you probably coined it the best when you came up and said for just even a dollar, if I'm correct, for $1 adjustment in any one direction for the residential towards commercial, it almost quadruple the excess that they would have to pick up. Now, the one thing I've always understood about the commercial industrial properties in this town, especially the businesses who are right now taking some of the largest hits due to COVID-19, and they themselves just struggling to get by, but yet still have a tax burden that they're responsible to pay, they, for all intents and purposes, have a much easier time just packing up and moving out and going someplace else like Tennessee or North Carolina to a better valuation place, or they're not in Massachusetts anymore, compared to a house or homeowner or residential person who has a less likelihood to leave and B, less of an opportunity to leave, and that burden would shift over to the residential properties. Is that also a logical assessment?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So basically the way we have things now is, for all intents and purposes, a finely tuned, well-oiled balanced machine that should stay and should remain at a single tax rate and for the amount of tax rate that we have, it's a comparably good rate compared to our peer towns. Is that also a safe assessment?
Yes. Well, but you know, obviously, the rate decision is a policy decision.
Correct. Which we'll make.
Right. Thank you, Councilor Jones.
Thank you,
Councilor DeLorco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, a couple of my questions were already answered. If we do go to a dual tax rate, one goes up, one goes down, obviously, and we save the residents some money, but we kill the commercial people. So the issue I got is that you know, with this COVID issue now, that we need to make sure that all our industrial park, you know, all our commercial property is rented. So I'm going to say that I'm in favor of keeping it at a single tax rate, because we got to make sure. I mean, I called around. I mean, they're paying like $75 a square foot in Boston. Out by Waltham, it's like 30, 35, something like that. And I mean, Franklin's a pretty good place to come and rent if you need it, if you have a commercial piece of property. So I'm definitely in favor of a single rate.
Thank you, Councilor DeLorco. Councilor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, you're not going to get me to vote for a dual tax rate now or ever. And if you ever do propose it, I'll be the first one here to say it's ridiculous. You first look at what our commercial buildings do in our town. They employ our residents, They don't use a lot of our resources, as in school, water, trash. They do all their own. They're really not a burden, and they're the highest taxable item in town. So why would we want to put more burden on them? In a recent, and I'll go back about 5 years ago, in a recent visit to some commercial businesses, with the council, we were walking around, and a CEO of a local company spoke to several of us and said that he has been offered many tax breaks to leave Franklin, his business here in Franklin, Massachusetts, and bring that down to South Carolina and North Carolina, which would in turn lose this community $30 million and more in one shift of their closing their business, not counting the jobs that would be put out. COVID or not, it's not a good idea for us. We were founded, this town was founded with the motto, industry need not wish. We were founded based on the fact that we invite industry to be here because they employ our people, they employ our citizens, they let them shop in our local local supermarkets, they eat at our small businesses every day, they shop in our community. If you want to look at what a dual tax rate does, look at communities like Worcester and Milford, who both, I know Worcester still does, I don't know if Milford still does, have their dual tax rate, and what happened to their downtowns when that went into effect. Their commercial and small businesses plummeted. Let's look at reality and what the facts are. Landlords, you can do a dual tax for rate at any time. They're going to pass it on to their tenants as a triple net charge. The tenant, who is the small business that you shop at their restaurant, you shop at their store or go to their restaurant, is now going to up the price of a burger, up the price of what you pay for their items in their store, because they have to defer that cost to them. That means ultimately, yeah, you're saving a couple dollars in taxes, and as Mr. Philly had mentioned, maybe even $435, but it's probably going to cost you to shop locally $3,000, $2,000 more. So it doesn't make sense, and it's not good business for our community. It's not good business as citizens are of our community to invite businesses. We need to encourage more businesses to come to our town so that we can give more opportunities for our residents to use our small businesses. I could go on for hours on this. I feel like I've been a student of this for years. The levy, people, we're going up 2.5 no matter what. You want to slice it one way or another. You know, where assessments got increased, so that takes up a huge chunk of the levy, and the remaining amount's going to be done with a tax increase. I look at it that way. Towns, until Prop 2.5 is shot down or fixed or corrected, are going to continue to go up 2.5%. It's the only way for us to continue to pay our bills. And our bills are raises to our employees every year. They need to live. They need to shop in our community. They need to be able to pay their houses. It's the cost of health insurance, which for any small business owner or anybody knows, it's through the roof. We're a big business. We're $100 million business that has expenses every year that goes up. The only way we do that is to raise our tax levy every year by 2.5%. Anybody that knows me knows I don't want to pay more. I sit here every 2 weeks and complain about the money that we pay out the door, right? And, you know, myself and many of our business owners and our residents in Franklin pay a lot in taxes, and we pay a lot in water and sewer fees, but we pay that for the opportunity to live in a beautiful community that has a lot to offer. And people day in and day out move here for the small town feel, and we're trying to preserve that. So, I'm 100% for what's been proposed. As much as I don't like it, I can stomp up and down and cry, but I do not want to pick up the phone, call the police, the fire, not have them come. I don't want to have my water not working or brown water coming out of my tap. I want everything to work just as it is. And I want my 12 and 14-year-old daughters to be able to grow up in a community and be proud of what it's like. So thank you very much, and I'll be voting yes on this.
Thank you, Councilor Kelly. Any other councillor want to speak on this issue? Councillor Bisanti, I'll give you a second shot.
Sure, here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just say two words. Woonsocket, Rhode Island, that was a split tax rate. I don't know how many decades ago, but I talk to people, they tell me that was one of the detracting factors of what led Woonsocket downward in as far as the dual tax rate goes and how it affected the business community. that adds to the list that Matt Kelly just talked about. I know Milford is not happy with the dual tax rate, whether they're contemplating, last I heard they were contemplating changing it back to a single rate. I do have one more question, Mr. Chairman, for either Kevin or Mr. Feely.
Please.
So if with the raising valuations going up, why didn't our tax rate go down, or should we just be happy where it held?
Well, the rate isn't going up as much as the increases in value that are taking place overall are about a percent and a half, and you know we're going to 2.5. We're raising the we're taking advantage of the opportunity that the state provision that we can increase our levy by 2.5% annually. And so the changes overall are not offsetting the additional 2.5 that we're raising.
So you're saying the public should be happy with the fact that we're not going quite that as high as we'd be entitled to. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we're raising the additional money that's allowed under Proposition 2.5. We're adding 2.5% to the allowed levy from last year. And what's happening is that the values are this year that are being presented are based primarily on calendar year 2019. You know, we're going to be seeing something different. We'll be analyzing those things. Our analysis starts tomorrow for fiscal 22. But right now, we're presenting to you the best information we have on values as of January 1st, 2020. So they're nearly a year old. But we have increased them. We have uniformly made sure that we've created equitable values. Some properties are going up more than others, as always, and some may be staying just about the same.
May I just one more, just through the chair to Jamie?
Okay.
Jamie, what, just to play devil's advocate, what would happen if we didn't change the tax rate? I mean, are we mandated, or do we have to do this?
Yeah. You're, Mr. Chair, I think if I understand your question correctly, Councilor Bisanti, under state law, the tax levy raises 2.5% each year. And traditionally, at least as far back as Jeff Nutting, that I can speak for, because, you know, I worked with Jeff and know Jeff, that is what the town of Franklin has done since 2001 when he got here. I can't speak before, but my educated guess tells me that's what the town has been doing for probably forever. If you went lower, you would have to, or if you took valuations down, either or, according to, you know, with the way Chris mentioned it, you'd be cutting services. You'd be cutting jobs, you'd be cutting programs, you'd be cutting roads, you know, whatever the decisions were, schools, you know, whatever it is, out of the town budget, not the enterprise fund. So your $118, $120 million a year budget, then you'd be cutting, you know, 80, 75% of our budget's personnel and health, you know, health benefits. So you'd be cutting that stuff.
You see what I'm saying, Jay? I want people to hear this, because I don't want people to think that this is something that we can avoid.
I also would mention, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, I think one view from 30,000 feet is you have to remember that the local financial guidance we have on how we do these things is all etched out in state law. We don't get to just do this 6 months ago. We don't get to just do all this stuff. This is all certified by the state. Kevin and Chris, the assessor's work is all voted by elected officials who go to DOR. It's a heavily municipal finance is a heavily regulated industry. There's not a tremendous amount of flexibility. The real policy question, as Kevin pointed out before you tonight, is do you want a single tax rate or do you want a dual tax rate? Mm-hmm. That's the issue. And if that ever the town went to a dual tax rate, Milford's a great example, where if you go back, you're now slamming the residents the inverse. Mm-hmm. You just can't go back. It is not something you just do. Yep. It is almost impossible. Once you go down that road, you can't go back. To your point about Woonsocket or other communities, there you go. It's virtually impossible to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Bazzanti. Chris, did you have something you wanted to add?
One thing maybe help clarify.
Final comment.
So the setting of the tax rate, that number is actually the result of the levy and the valuation. So we don't have an option. That number is the answer to our valuation to the levy. So again, we could change whether a single or dual tax rate, but that number,
is not whether,
regardless of which way you pick, is the result of those choices. It's not an arbitrary number.
Good. That's what I want to be clear.
Thank you.
Excuse me. We just like the in sum that it's revenue neutral, the decision. We don't gain anything, and that should be clear to the folks out there, that the split rate won't change the amount to be collected, to be billed and collected.
Mm-hmm. Very, very quick.
No worries. No, I just want to make it. I just want to add something in as a point of clarification in regards to the comments that have been going on, and I think we haven't touched base on it yet. Is under state law, under Proposition 2.5, any time that we request additional funding above 2.5%, it has to go to the citizens to request an override. Anytime we want to have anything less than 2.5%, that also has to go to the citizens to request an underwrite. So anything above and beyond 2.5% has to be decided by the voters regardless by state law. Am I correct when I say that?
The first point, Councilor Jones, was accurate. The second was not.
No.
But I'm gonna absolutely just go right in and say we do not get into a conversation about underrides. They are very rare. We can do that some other day at a presentation if we want to talk about underrides. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Councilor Jones. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to ask a question regarding the tax rate? See anything, Chrissy?
No.
Okay. I would entertain a motion to close the tax classification residential.
So moved. Second.
Tax hearing. Motion is second. Discussion seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. I am going to take legislation for action out of sequence so that those people interested in the tax pieces will go through that legislation. And then when we go on to our next hearing, we'll do the same thing there. So with that, we're going to move to
resolution
20-68, tax classification residential factor. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 20-68. This is for tax classification for residential factors. Whereas a public hearing on the property tax classification was held and closed on December 2nd, 2020. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the residential factor will be set at 1.
Move resolution 20-68.
Second.
Motion and second. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. A majority votes required to approve resolution 20-68. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Motion carries. Resolution 20-69, tax classification, open space exemption. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 20-69, tax classification for open space exemption. Whereas a public hearing on the property tax classification was held and closed on December 2nd, 2020. Now, therefore, be resolved that there not be an exemption for open space.
Move resolution 20-69.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 20-69. Again, a majority votes required. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Motion carries. Resolution 20-70, tax classification, small business exemption. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 20-70, tax classification for small business exemption. Whereas the public hearing on the property tax classification was held and closed on December 2nd, 2020. Now, therefore, be it resolved that there not be an exemption for small businesses.
Move resolution 20-70.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 20-70. Again, a majority vote's required. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Resolution 20-71, tax classification, residential property exemption. Clerk will read the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is resolution 20-71, tax classification for residential property exemptions. Whereas a public hearing on the property tax classification was held and closed on December 2nd, 2020. Now, therefore, be resolved that there not be an exemption for residential property.
Move resolution 20-71.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion to approve resolution 20-71. Again, a majority vote's required. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Thank you, Kevin. Mr. Feely, thank you very much, and the Board of Assessors for their fine work.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.